Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. I'm going to play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Steelers Final Score. I'm Jeff Harbin, editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Join with me, as always, is Chris Carter. We're here to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers steamrolling the Cleveland Browns with some backup quarterback most people have never heard of. I think his name is Ben Roethlisberger, who came in and released, did his best Landry Jones impersonation. Chris, what do you think after the game, bud?
I'm super excited. It's funny. Ben all week said, I can play. And then all of a sudden he has to play. And he rose to the occasion, made several plays. But shout out to the defense. After not getting any sacks on Derek Carr last week, they got six this week on Johnny Manziel, getting three turnovers and ultimately keeping the Browns away from the Steelers and holding that lead, finishing the game. I was truly impressed by the way that they played and the way that the whole team sort of came together. And Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant, though a fumble from Bryant earlier in the game, that they are now the two leading receivers in the NFL for this week in yardage. So big ups to the whole team. That was a complete team win and a great way to go into the bye week.
Absolutely. And before we get into any specifics, talk about stats, talk about issues, if you want to call in, you can. If you're listening live, it's 347-850-8581. Again, it's 347-850-8581. And the Pittsburgh Steelers win moves them to 6-4 on the regular season. They head into their bye week on back-to-back wins, win over the Oakland Raiders in Week 9, the Cleveland Browns in Week 10. And it was good to see Ben Roethlisberger out on the field. Everyone had that question in the back of their head, or back of their minds, I should say, early today when they saw that Ben Roethlisberger was going to be active. He was going to back up Landry Jones. The question was, if he's healthy enough to back him up, why isn't he playing? Well, you hoped as a fan that you didn't have to see Ben Roethlisberger today. You hoped that Landry Jones could get the job done. But after that first few drives with Roethlisberger at the helm, you knew that he was going to be okay. The offensive line did a good job protecting him, although they didn't really run under center too much. A lot of people were looking at the rushing yards today and saying, well, you know, what's up with D'Angelo Williams? Well, they didn't run out of standard operation, so to speak. You know, they were running primarily out of the shotgun. They didn't have Roosevelt Nixon there as much to help lead the way. And because of that, that's going to hinder a running back like D'Angelo Williams. D'Angelo Williams likes to move. He's not like Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell can run out of the shotgun almost as well as he can out of the standard formation. So I wouldn't be too concerned about the Steelers' running game. But let's look at some statistics here before we move on. Ben Roethlisberger finished the day 22 of 33, 379 yards, three touchdowns, one really bad pick. He was sacked once. And his rating, quarterback rating, 123.2. Then we have D'Angelo Williams finished with 17 carries for 54 yards, a long of 12 yards. But here we go. We're talking about receiving yards. Martavis Bryant, six receptions for 178 yards. He averaged 29.7 yards. That's incredible for a touchdown. His long was 64 yards. He had 10 targets on the day, but as always, 14 targets for Antonio Brown. He caught 10 of them for 139 and two touchdowns, the second of which was absolutely incredible, to catch over the middle, 56-yard run, and a nice little flip into the end zone that he stuck the landing on. I'll give him a 10 on that. Defensively, I was impressed with the defense and how they shut down the Browns' running game. The Browns' rushers, right? Let's The leading rusher was Johnny Manziel with 3 carries for 17 yards. They rushed for a total of 15 yards on the day. 15 yards. So you want to talk about passing yards. They did give up 372 yards to Johnny Manziel, but you know what? They made him one-dimensional, and when you do that, that's a good. What else stuck out in your mind, Chris, after the game?
I mean, what stuck in my mind was not only did they take away the they took away the ground game, they really got after Manziel. There were some plays where he was able to stand in there, but the Browns realized that their ground game was inept, and once really the second half hit, it was all catch-up time. And it was really just a matter of how many times were they going to throw the ball and how many times could the Steelers limit them. And really, they shut it down. I thought I was really impressed by how they handled that last drive in the red zone where the Browns were moving the ball. And then I thought the refs gave that first down to them who made the hit? Was it Will Allen that hit Andre Hawkins over the middle? And he just got laid out. I didn't think he was anywhere near first down with the spot that he had, but they gave it to him, and then they came out and shut him down fourth down again. And then they did give up a touchdown after Ben turned it right back over. But, man, I was super proud of the defense. They shut down the run. They brought the heat. And really, even the secondary, they were getting guys down, and they were bringing the pain. There were some hits out there today. Then Mike Mitchell had a great interception in the red zone, and he has proved his money. And when everyone said, stay calm, this guy needs to, well, not everybody said, but I know I said, and a few other things, you also said this too, Jeff, just saying that, this guy, give him a year to learn the defense, you let him get adjusted. Ryan Clark and James Ferrier also struggled their first years. And he's sure enough, he has proved to be a worthy free agent acquisition. But Antonio Brown, man, who can stop him? No, seriously, whenever Ben was in trouble, he looked his way and he made it happen. The touchdown run he had and the somersault flip, man, that guy's the best wide receiver in all of football, no question about it.
Yeah, it's understandable why. Well, I guess I should say I don't understand is what I meant to say. Why defenses are still trying to play single coverage, and maybe it's because of Martavis Bryant on the other side. You had a game like today where as a defense, and the Browns were so limited without Whitner and Hayden in the secondary, you almost had to say, okay, are we going to double Antonio Brown? Because then we're single coverage on Martavis Bryant, and he's torching us. Okay, so we're going to roll our coverage over to Bryant, and then Antonio Brown's torching us. And this is what Pittsburgh Steelers fans predicted and thought they were going to see for the entire season, and they just thought they'd have a dynamic running back there as well. And that's not a cut on D'Angelo Williams by any stretch of the imagination, but still, it was exciting to watch. And I think the Steelers fans should be excited because you're on a two-game winning streak heading to the bye week. Ben Roethlisberger proved everyone on a national stage, so to speak, or on the biggest stage of them all in the actual regular season play that he is capable of making the throws. He was able to scramble. You give him a whole week off, he's going to be able to rest. I mean, think of what he did today after what we thought when we spoke last week at this time, Chris, what we thought was going to be happening. And then you look at what he did today and you think, okay, with another week, he should be okay. The fact that the knee's not even talked about anymore in terms of his knee sprain that was suffered against the Rams in week 3. So I think this is really good news for the Pittsburgh Steelers. It gives him a week for James Harrison to get healthy. D'Angelo Williams was nursing that foot injury. He had some inflammation early in the week last week. It'll give him a chance to nurse and get right. Ben Roethlisberger will get a chance to get right. Now, I think that ultimately it's going to give the Steelers a chance to regroup as they go into a really, really important stretch of games coming up after the bye week. We do have some phone calls to get to. If you want to call in, you can, 347-850-8581. If we don't get to you right away, stay on the line. We'll get to you, I promise. Let's get this first number on 732-780. You're on with Jeff and Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen, good afternoon. What a great day. What a great day for a backup quarterback, huh? How do you like those apples? I just couldn't believe how Landry Jones got knocked out of the game so quick. And, I guess as a Steelers fan, you got to panic when you said that because Ben is suited up, but we really didn't know what we'd get out of Ben because we didn't know, what his health was like. But what a great game. And I think, when you look at everybody, Bryant stepped up, Brown stepped up. I think the offensive line did a great job. Did he even get sacked today, gentlemen? I didn't see that. Did he get touched at all or not really?
One time.
Oh,
one time
he definitely
got
took
sacked.
They definitely helped him, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about the defense, guys? Stepping up, six sacks, putting pressure on Menzel all day, even though he was passing for some big gains. What about the stand that they took by allowing them to only get one TD, but sacking the guy six times and just confusing the heck out of him? I mean, I thought it was a great team performance today, not only because we put up points, and don't forget, there were some points that we left out there, maybe going for it on fourth and one when we should have just kicked the field goal, and maybe the drop by Brian inside the 10-yard line when he lost it and it was a fumble. So who knows? This game could have easily been, you know, close to 40 points on the offensive line if those two mistakes don't happen. So anyway, I thought it was a great all-around performance, the team effort, and just I think Ben's adrenaline was what really carried the whole game.
Yeah, definitely.
That's where you earn your money, guys. That's when you prove your worth of being worth the $18, $19 million, when you got to come in on short notice like that and say, you know what? It's a leadership thing. I mean, that's what Ben brings to the table. He's a leader. He's not a follower. He's a leader. And the team trusts him. And even though he's not 100%, they believe in him, and they believe he could lead them to victory. And I think that probably also got the defense pumped up, saying, hey, you know what? We know he's not 100%. This may be a low-scoring game. We need to do our part. And they played so much better than last week, the defense. I mean, look at how great they played. I mean, they look like a great unit. I think they're going to give a lot of teams trouble if we get into the thick of things, especially into the playoffs.
Well, you know, let's talk about the defense for a second, because they're a defense that the main concern about this unit is they're going to give up yardage. We know that. They're going to give up passing yards. They're going to give up possibly some ground yards. We saw last week with Tavius Murray actually run the ball well against the defense. But here's the things that they thrive on. They thrive on turnovers. They thrive on getting to the quarterback. You saw what a healthy Stephon Tuitt and a rested Cam Hayward look like again today, absolutely dominating the point of attack on the line of scrimmage. But if they don't get those turnovers, if they don't get to the quarterback, you saw what happens to this defense, and that is they get exposed. But they're hard hitting. You know what? And it's almost like it's like those old westerns, Chris. You're going to go down. You're going to go down, guns a blazing. And that's almost like the way this defense is, and the way that Butler is handling this unit is, you know what? We may give up some points, and we may give up a lot of yards, but you know what? We're going to blitz the hell out of you, and not only going to blitz the hell out of you, when you catch that football, you're going to feel it. And this is the second straight game that I can visibly watch this team and say, boy, they are trying to hurt people. I mean, and hey, it's football. It's a physical game. Like, some people would take offense to that statement, but in reality of the life in the NFL, they are trying to go out there and make a statement by how hard they're punishing their opponents. It's fun to watch. It's frustrating to watch at times, too. I'll say that. But what are your overall thoughts on the defense, Chris?
I mean, the defense, they really got after the run. There were a few times I thought that they let Manziel escape, but at the same time, they did what you expect them to do. They keep the plays in front of them. They don't allow huge, big plays quite too often. There were a few times I thought that they had troubles getting away from a few holds, but ultimately, I mean, when you get six sacks on a guy and you force three turnovers, and you limit them to 9 points, there's nothing you can say but happy things about the defense. Sure, that you know, they gave up that one touchdown, and they did give up yards to Manziel. But at the end of the day, I'm looking at the way that they imposed their will at times on Cleveland, and in the big plays and the big moments, they made it happen. Mike Mitchell has been playing really strong. He continues to be the force of the secondary. But to me, like, even the cornerbacks, they didn't have like a really bad day. They weren't looking exposed out there. There weren't any gaping penalties that kept the Browns alive at all times. And again, when it came down to third down, they got in the red zone. Cleveland was having troubles because our heat was getting after Manziel, forcing him to move from his launch spot. And I'll also say there were quite a few big plays where they took away the quick options. There was one play which Manziel. The play right before he scrambled and got to the 1 yard line, he was looking to hit his tight end over the middle on a hitch route, and Timmons jumped it, and then Manziel had to pull it, and I think he got sacked on that play. But ultimately, they looked like they were sound. They knew their responsibilities, and they executed their responsibilities, and they were able to get after the quarterback, make some plays. Man, if this defense can play like this throughout the rest of the season, the Steelers have a really good chance at beating anybody and everybody they face, especially when you see how Ben Roethlisberger, coming into a game he did not expect to play in, was able to just light up the scoreboard with his team, and that's even with some big mistakes, including his interception and Martavis Bryant's fumble that, you know, after the huge 64-yard pass. So I'm super proud of the defense. I'm pretty sure that they were being told all week, you're going to have to go win this game. And the way that they played, the Steelers could have won today if Landry Jones had even stayed in the game. So super proud of them. I want to go back and film and look at how they were plugging up the middle and taking away rushing lanes. But I especially also want to look at just the way that they got after Manziel, because some of the sacks came after like second and third efforts, where you saw it wasn't like a clean blitz, or it wasn't like they beat a guy with one move and then that was able to get to him. Some of them were Manziel bounced around, bought himself some time, and he still got sacked. And it was just because they took away the pursuit lane, and the coverage also really helped on the backside. So, again, super happy with the way the defense was playing. No really big, dumb mistakes, and just a fun game to watch for Steelers fans.
Yeah, definitely. We have another caller to get on the air here. Let's get 727-520. You're on with Jeff and Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call, like always. I guess I'd like to take the scenic route and get straight to Seattle. But since it's okay, the scenic route, no offense intended to the Browns, seriously. But they're not the type of opponent you can accurately gauge your own players' performances against. I'd like to say that, like Chris said, kudos. Timmons on the tight end seemed to work this week. And, you know, Gay Island shirts might be coming. You know, they might be printed pretty soon. I mean, but after all...
I don't know if that's the best word.
Right. After all, it's Cleveland, though. And, you know, some fans are going to want to say that Manziel, you know, picked apart our defense. I can't really say that I feel that way. It almost felt like an old-fashioned shootout. I mean, both teams abandoned the runs, you know, fairly early, depending. But more importantly, I guess, Cleveland didn't seem to be as opportunistic in the red zone as we were today. All things said, it's Cleveland. But I guess storyline for today has to be Roethlisberger back, so no one has to hear that about the looming availability for 2 weeks against Seattle or in Seattle. But going to Seattle, they're not like many opponents we've played this year. They have the franchise quarterback, running back, and I guess receiver if you count Graham. I mean, the closest thing we've played this year to be that complete offensively has to be Cincinnati or even New England week one. They both beat us. How do you guys feel about Seattle, heading to Seattle in 2 weeks? I mean, that's pretty much where I'm going.
Yeah, I mean, before I go on to Seattle and give my perspective on that, in my opinion, I look at this game today and say the Steelers did what they should do. You play a lesser opponent. People have seen the Steelers play down to opponents for years now under Mike Tomlin, whether it was the Jets in 2014, whether it was, some would say, the Ravens or Chiefs in 2015, they steamrolled this team. They beat them 30-9. It was a shootout. It was a bend-don't-break defense. What else is new? You know what? They took advantage of it. They put their foot on the throttle, and they beat the team the way that they should. And so I look at that and say, I can tell something from a team by that. Now, I understand what you're saying, though, in terms of looking at specific matchups. For instance, Antonio Brown was going against, and Martavis Bryant, everything, the furthest thing from a who's who in terms of defensive backs. So looking ahead to Seattle, I don't think Seattle is as daunting as it once was. If anything's daunting about the Seattle game, it's the venue. It's that it's difficult to play in Seattle. It's very loud. Ben Roethlisberger being in the game will certainly help. And they're going to have to run the football. I think with Seattle, you want to control the clock. You want to make sure you take advantage of every opportunity. But Seattle's defense, or I should say Seattle's offense, if you heard today, they actually mentioned this, is that they've given up the most sacks in the National Football League, and Cleveland was second to worst. And it's going to be on the Steelers' defense, I think, again. With Roethlisberger healthy, I don't think there's any any defense Steelers can't score on. I honestly believe that. And with D'Angelo Williams proving himself in the backfield in lieu of Le'Veon Bell, with Keith Miller, Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, Roethlisberger's healthy, I think they can move the ball on everybody. Heck, Jordan Berry only punted the ball once today. Now, I know Cleveland's not as good, but at the same time, they were moving the ball, they kept moving the chains, and they're taking advantage. Seattle is a different opponent. They might be up there with those teams that you mentioned in terms of Cincinnati and New England. However, I think they're very, very far from those two teams because, obviously, those two teams you mentioned are undefeated. And Seattle has struggled. They've struggled in several different situations. Chris, what do you think about that Seattle game?
I've always thought, like, man, I can't wait to see for us to play this game, and partially because I wanted to see Antonio Brown go up against Richard Sherman and put it to him and say, look, you claim to be the best corner for the past, you know, 3-4 years. Let's see how you do against me. And I really think the type of receivers that give Sherman fits are not the tall receivers. That's why he came at Crabtree. That's why Calvin Johnson wasn't able to light him up. But it's the quick, tight route runners that have really great hands and go after him. And I think that the Steelers could really get after that defense. Their offensive line has shown that they can make plays. I'm interested to see how they play against the Cardinals. How do they play against a team that they know very well? And you know, the Steelers, they have an interesting streak on the Seahawks. The Seahawks have not scored against Pittsburgh since the Super Bowl 40 10 years ago. In our two matchups since, we've shut them out twice. And I think that our defense is playing just at the right caliber, that Russell Wilson is going to have to make several plays and rely on his players, on his receivers to make several plays for him that keep them in the game. I'm very confident about playing this team. Whereas Marshawn Lynch is a franchise running back, he's not nearly what he was 2 years ago or even last year. He seems to be showing a lot of rust compared to what he was in the previous season. And Jimmy Graham, he doesn't seem to fit their offense just yet. He's still trying to find his role. But I'm not entirely scared of the Seahawks team. I admit, at the beginning of the season, I was excited to play them, and I was like, oh, man, that's going to be a big, tough bruiser game. Now I'm kind of, it's going to be a bruiser game because they still hit hard, but I'm not at all terrified of playing this team, and I'm very confident going in, especially with a week of rest. Everyone talks about how we do horrible when we travel to the West, but I think the Steelers will be in a good place. Ben should be healthy. Williams should be healthy. The Shazier should be healthy. I think the team should be as healthy as we can get them these days. And I'm looking forward to see them put up some serious points like the way that the Bengals did against the Seahawks, and for the defense to impose their will and bring it to these guys. I don't think it'll be as daunting a challenge as, you know, going up against the Patriots would be. So I'm excited to see that game.
Yeah, and it's going to be a long wait for that. I mean, waiting in the bye week for its week because you got to sit around, you got to watch all the other teams play. But I think for Steeler fans, if there's one thing you know about the bye week, A, no one can get hurt, and B, you can't lose. So I think everyone should just rest and relax next week, get themselves ready for that big matchup. But we thank you for the phone call. Appreciate it as always. We have another caller waiting. Let's see if we can get this person on the air. 814-592, you're on with Jeff and Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Jake from Hawaii.
Hey, Jake, what's going on, man?
Hey, good to talk to you guys again. Hey, I wanted to talk just briefly about the playoff picture we have looking out here. Are the 3-5 teams officially, can we say they're out of it, or are we still worried about, like, Miami sneaking in now after winning today and things?
Yeah, I don't think it's time that you can say that those 3-5 teams are out of it yet. I'm actually looking up the playoff picture as we speak. Chris, what do you think about that? Go ahead.
It depends on which 3-5 teams you're talking about. You know, the Colts or somebody from the AFC South with a bad record they're going to make the playoffs. But at the same time, you know that any team can really get hot at any point in time in the NFL. I mean, if you remember Washington from RG3's rookie year, they looked dead in the water, and then all of a sudden they put together like 8 wins in a row, and then they were in the wild cards of the playoffs. And they were in it until RG3 got knocked out in that playoff game. Now, is there a team of that caliber right now? I don't think so, because you're looking at the AFC playoff picture. The Bills are 5-4. The Jets are 5-4. And, you know, they're creeping in. I think that as far as the teams that are 3-5 that aren't in the AFC South, I mean, that you're talking about the Dolphins right now, really. That's the only other team that you could count like that. The Ravens are out. The Browns are out. You know, the Jaguars are out, even though they're, 3-6 right now. Yeah, I don't see them doing anything because they still got to go through some tough opponents.
What about KC? If KC wins in Denver, that's the team that scares me the most.
The Raiders are 4-4. They're losing 10-0 currently as we speak. If you're listening live, but the Steelers have the head-to-head win over them. And let's be honest, this is all about Pittsburgh making the playoffs. Kansas City, that's a tough one. That's a team that scares me because they're a team that can get hot at the right time, and they have the head-to-head victory over Pittsburgh. So you want to avoid a tie there. Miami. I don't know. They're in such a tough division. Well, they are in a tough division. I mean, I can't see them, you know, handling their division matchups in the second half very well, which would equate to 3 losses if it's Buffalo, New York, and New England, having to play them each 3 times. The Bills, same thing. The Jets, they're going to be battling each other as well as having to play New England again. Pittsburgh will be, I think, tomorrow when all is said and done, they'll be 5-4 or 6-4. They'll be in the number 5 seed, I believe.
Yep.
Going into the bye week, which is a great spot, and I wrote an article about that last week.
That's the goal, right?
Yep.
You want to play that winner, whoever wins the AFC South. Right now, it's the Colts at 4-5. But let's be honest, that AFC South, like Chris mentioned, you know, you want to say that the Jags are out of it at 3-6? Not really. I mean, if the Colts continue to slip without Andrew Luck, if the Houston Texans lose on Monday Night Football to the Bengals, they're 3-6. This is really almost up for grabs in the AFC South.
I'm not saying the divisions. I'm saying as far as them catching us. I'm saying I think they're out. I agree with you. I don't know if anybody's going to catch us.
I think the goal, like you said, is a 5 seed. But I was just wondering, I mean, do we have someone to worry about? Like, I guess catching us, like you were saying, the Dolphins or the Texans. You know, if there was a 3-5 team, you thought it was going to get hot. I guess your best guess was if the Chiefs could beat the Broncos today, that would be the team. And that's kind of what I was thinking as well. But I just wanted to get your opinion if the Dolphins are for real. They seem to be up and down every week.
They're very inconsistent.
I'll tell
you what, the one thing that's nice about Pittsburgh right now is they control their own destiny. They don't have to watch other teams. They don't have to look at the scoreboard and see who's doing that. Yeah, they'll do that in retrospect and wondering where they are. But from a fan's perspective, if the Pittsburgh Steelers continue to win, it won't matter what anyone else does. They'll be in the playoffs. So I think that's what fans need to take away from this game. Do you have anything else before we let you go?
No, thank you, guys. I appreciate you, Paul.
Hey, enjoy the weather out there in Hawaii. It's a lot better than Maryland, I bet.
Yeah, no worries.
Exactly. All right, thanks for the phone call. If anyone else wants to call in, the lines are open now, 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. The playoff picture is certainly starting to round into shape. Let's take a look at some scores. Go on the scoreboard from the early games.
Man.
For the week 10. Let's talk about the AFC North. The Jacksonville Jaguars go into M&T Bank Stadium and literally put a dagger into the Baltimore Ravens. If there's nothing better than the Steelers dominating the Browns, it's watching the Ravens get beat by the Jaguars at home 22-20. It was an ugly game. I think everyone now can say that the Ravens are officially done. If they weren't done before this week, they're done now. And remember, this is coming off a bye week. Baltimore's coming off a bye week. They have no one to throw the ball to. That team is in complete disarray. There's talk of Harbaugh possibly being on the hot seat. There's talk of Newsom maybe being on the hot seat. Interesting to see how that – oh, yeah, I'm serious. I live in Maryland, man. I'll tell you this. People are livid. They're not used to this. And this is something that I'm waiting for the Ravens to lose their 9th game because I've been waiting to write this article since probably about 3 weeks ago. I was going to write it, and I said, now I'm going to wait. And I'm going to wait until they lose their 9th game, which is going to guarantee a losing season. And I'm going to talk it's going to be his first losing season, but it's going to speak to Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the fact that when they were in their lowest level, they were 8-8. When they were rebuilding, they were 8-8. When they were rebuilding, they almost made the playoffs. They were a Ryan Suckup 40-yard field goal away from making the playoffs in 2013, and they just missed. And I understand that that almost doesn't count. I get that. But it speaks to the Pittsburgh Steelers when they can say that that Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season, and that when they were rebuilding, they were doing it while winning and staying relevant, and that's important. But other games to get to. Miami pulls the upset out in Philly. They're up, they won 20-19. Dallas Cowboys, I love watching Dallas lose. They lost 10-6 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're now 2-7. They have lost 7 straight games, all without Tony Romo. Romo comes back next week. I don't think it's going to help matters at all, because that team, you talk about the Ravens, the Cowboys are right there with them. Other
and
Hardy
supposedly bought someone today.
You know, I haven't seen any of that, those highlights, so I'll have to check them out later. I'm sorry, but Jerry Jones, he's going to have to fall on his sword with that Greg Hardy situation, because that's just a bad move. Hey, the Green Bay Packers have lost their third in a row. They lost to the Detroit Lions 18-16 in a very dramatic fashion, as 2 missed field goals by Matt Prater gave the Green Bay Packers gave them hope, and they were a 2-point conversion away from tying it up. They weren't able to cash in, and they end up losing 18-16. So I'll tell you what,
Jeff,
go ahead.
I was able to catch the last second of that. They kicked an onside kick right to Calvin Johnson. He dropped it, and then they had a chance to score to kick a field goal, and the Lions blocked it. It was a crazy win, and that's. The Lions, because I have several friends who live in or used to live in Pittsburgh that are Lions fans, and one of them went to Lambeau Field today, and I was like, man, why are you doing that to yourself? And she is losing her mind right now, because she's just like, you know, the whole game that they were up and down and up and down, and they haven't beaten Green Bay in Green Bay for like 20 years or something like that, and then to see that happen, I mean, just the way that it happened, it was just too dramatic for anyone. It was truly a crazy game the way that it ended out, and the Green Bay Packers they got a, you know, he said R E L A X, and right now it may be P A N I C because they are in trouble.
I'll tell you what, in terms of parity in the National Football League, you really don't know what's going to happen. I mean, the Carolina Panthers, they're still undefeated. They won today. Cam Newton beats the Tennessee Titans, which, I mean, you're not going to hang your head on that win too many times, just like the Steelers aren't going to hang their head on the Browns win. But still, the New England Patriots are playing currently, as well as the Monday Night Football game, which is the Houston Texans and the Cincinnati Bengals. We have another phone call here. Let's see if we can get this person on the air. We have 727-520. You're on with Chris and Jeff. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I'm sorry it's me again, but if we can have fun with the around the league, in that point to Tomlin seasons, none under 500, that's great. But I'd like to go back and debate, because 2009, when we were 5-7, rattled off 4 in a row, ending in Miami and almost made it, that season may have been worse than even the 0-4 start that ended with the loss to the Vikings in London 2013. Any thoughts there? I mean, what's the worst season that we've had under Tomlin so far to you guys?
If I had to say the worst season, I mean, I guess I would say the 0-4 season. The 9-7 2009 season, don't forget that the Steelers were marred with injuries that year. Troy Polamalu goes out in the first game of the season, never really returns. They tried to bring him back, but he kept getting hurt. There were a rash of other injuries. I thought that year was a testament to just how hard the Steelers were going to fight to be. If I had to say, it would be the first of the 8-8 years, and not last year, because last year was, you know, they or not last year, 2 years ago. It'd be in 2012. I thought that was more disappointing, because the way they lost to the Cowboys late in the year, that was more frustrating to me than anything. But, I mean, they were 2-6 in 2013, and they pulled their butts up, and they said, hey, we gotta pull it together. They went 6-2 in those last games. And, really, they were not just suck-ups field goal, Jeff, but don't forget, that was the Antonio Brown against the Dolphins, his pinky toe stepped out of bounds. And when you consider how hard they fought back, and then Troy Polamalu had his final Pro Bowl season that year because he forced more fumbles than any defensive back, there were just a lot of factors that season that I would say that wouldn't be our worst. But also 2009, the way that they fought in the absence of Troy, that's when you started to see Ben start to emerge as the elite like signal caller, the way he did the Packers game, and you know, had the duel with Aaron Rodgers that had the last second touchdown to Mike Wallace. I wasn't so mad at that season because there were a lot of things going against the Steelers, and it was the one time in those 3 years that they didn't make the Super Bowl between 2008 and 2010. If I had to pick a season that I haven't liked the most under Mike Tomlin, it would probably be 2012 because they were coming off a 12-4 year. You thought that they could pull it together, and they really had a lot of struggles all throughout the season. But that's a hit or miss thing. Everyone's going to be able to feel differently on what their least favorite Tomlin season was. But I do love seeing that John Harbaugh is now. I had no idea, Jeff, that he would be on the hot seat this fast. But I am sort of just chuckling in my chair right now as far as when I hear that.
Well, you know, the funny thing agree. I'll go ahead and say 2009 was my most disappointing year for a lot of the reasons you guys have already mentioned. Coming off a Super Bowl, you hate that Super Bowl hangover. I just never forget that picture. I think they were playing in Kansas City and they're losing. Ben Roethlisberger left the game with a concussion and he just had this glassy-eyed, dumbfounded look on his face like, what in the heck is going on? And that's just what that kind of encapsulated the entire year. But it was bad. But, you know, here in Maryland, you know, I have my finger on the pulse of what's going on with the Baltimore Ravens. Unfortunately, I have to. And there's a lot of fans that are really upset with the team, and they're upset with the draft picks. And they're like, for instance, Perryman is the biggest goat right now because he's their number one draft pick, hasn't even seen the field yet. They're probably going to shut him down. Fans aren't happy with the Baltimore Ravens, and a lot of people aren't happy with the direction of the team. I don't think that Harbaugh goes anywhere. The guy did win a Super Bowl. He hasn't had a losing season since he took over for Brian Billick. I don't think that he goes anywhere, but it's just interesting or funny. As a Steelers fan, it's hilarious to hear this type of talk.
This is the first time they'll miss the playoffs. This is the first since he got there in 2008. He's seen AFC Championship games. He's been to the Super Bowl. They haven't missed the playoffs one season until now. And, I mean, like we said, we all called this after they won that Super Bowl. And what was that, 4 years ago now? And when Joe Flacco signed that huge contract, this is going to hurt them. This is going to set them back. They're not going to be able to keep their team together and keep rebuilding. And what's happening right now, but they had to let go several players over the past few years. You know, think about Anquan Boldin used to be a receiver for this team. And, I mean, he was a vital part of it. And he may not be as great as he was then right now, but he would still be an element that, you know, Joe Flacco can trust. Torrey Smith is gone. He was a speed demon for them. And he's the guy that Perryman is trying to replace right now, but he's too hurt up or whatever he is to be there. They've been scattered across, not as a lion. This is what we saw coming, and now it's like, well, now you got to take your licks. You know, just like how the Steelers took their licks when they tried to we tried to bulk up, keep our defensive stars
That's
and everything,
right.
and pay
Dollar
lots of
cap.
Money.
You got to pay the piper.
Exactly, and that
exactly.
is exactly what's happening to the Ravens right now. Is that you got to do it, but notice how the Steelers do it, and notice how the Ravens do it, and that's why I'm like I don't think that, you know, everyone's talking about, oh, the Ravens, they've been a model of consistency. Oh, let's just wait until their crew has to cycle out and they have to get new guys here. Because until I see them do it the way that we did and have to get a whole new defensive unit, have your youngsters become your superstars, you know, then I can say, okay, now you've been through it. But they're starting to go through it. Let's just see how this year ends. Do they catch hot fire? Do they make it like a 7-9 record? Can they find a way to, or do they completely fall apart? And how do they respond next season? Because if they do this again next season, then I do think someone will be calling John Harbaugh like, hey, what's going on, man? And he might be calling his brother like, hey, is there another coach's spot at NCAA? Because I might just not want to stick around town to see this. I am with you on the whole, like, how they're doing thing with the salary cap.
Hey.
Caller, anything else before we let you go?
Aside from you guys, have a happy Thanksgiving. Hope all's well. And talk to you guys in 2 weeks.
Yes, sir.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks for calling. We appreciate happy Thanksgiving to you, too. Hard to believe that Thanksgiving's right around the corner. Here's something I want to talk with you about, Chris. And if anyone's listening and they want to call in, phone lines are open, 347-850-8581. Getting back to the Steelers, Jacoby Jones. I want to talk about Jacoby Jones because they let Tre Archer walk. okay, and they bring in Jacoby Jones. They want the veteran experience. They want to get Antonio Brown off of punt return duties. And then all of a sudden, Jacoby Jones really doesn't look very comfortable back there. And everyone, the first, you know, last week against the Raiders, they said, well, he came in on Friday. He missed practice Friday. They seated him up Sunday and put him out there. He's got to have at least a week to practice. So a week of practice goes by, and it's more of the same. I personally think that the leash on Jacoby Jones is going to be very, very short because, let's be honest, he's expendable. I didn't think they needed to go out and get a Jacoby Jones anyways. I'd rather keep that roster spot for someone else that could possibly play more than one position. In other words, Jordan Todman can return kicks. Marcus Wheaton can return kicks. I don't think they need to have a kick return specialist, although Tomlin loves those guys, always has. What do you think about Jacoby Jones, his spot on the team moving forward, as well as his play after just two games?
I mean, hey, we're getting great play from our top line wide receivers. Darius Heyward-Bey is an experienced special teamer. He seems to be a guy that the team can trust in multiple situations. Why not put that kind of a speedster back there? Let him protect the ball. And that's the biggest thing. I don't think they brought Jacoby Jones in to light it up and put up multiple touchdowns through the punt and kick return game. I think they said, listen, just don't drop the ball. And he's dropping the football. That's the biggest thing. His confidence is shot. I don't know if I wouldn't say his athletic abilities aren't there. But he just looks gun shy. Like when he catches the ball, it's falling right through his hands. And it sucks for him. And you know, you're like, man, that's not good. But guess what? This is a football team that doesn't have time to feel bad for anybody, and especially not a guy that they just paid probably the minimum to bring on the team through free agency in the middle of the season. You know, one, I'm sure there's other guys out there that we could have. But two, you're right. Heyward-Bey, Wheaton, Todman. There's a whole bunch of speedsters on this team that could probably have reliable hands in a situation and are slightly expendable to the team. And I think that's the biggest thing. But when they put Archer back there, they're trying to put someone back there who, if they get hurt, this does not mean the end of a part of our offense or our defense. This is just a part of what this is just a guy that we're okay with losing. And we can trust him to be in this situation. And Jacoby Jones is not a guy that I trust right now with the way that he's played. He's been really struggling. He's been dropping the ball. Doesn't seem like he's even getting, when he gets the ball, he doesn't have a good shot at returning anything. So I'm with you. If I can get someone else to do that job and it's not really taken away from anything, I'm putting someone else in there and I'm letting Jacoby Jones go. And I'm seeing why the Chargers didn't want him.
Yeah, exactly. I think if it comes down to a roster spot, he's going to be the first to go. Because, like I said, he's expendable. There are certain players in certain positions that you can't afford to lose anybody. But, you know what, he's expendable. And let's go a little bit further down the line. I'll tell you something I was really happy with today defensively. You got to see a good look at some of these young players making plays or just going out there and just really trying hard. Bud Dupree, I thought, had a great game. He wasn't always around the quarterback. He did a great job of setting the edge. He has grown as the season has progressed. Is he a finished product?
Okay.
Far from it. But he has grown, and he's improved. Stephon Tuitt, people forget, this kid's only a second-year player. I mean, boy, that guy is a man-child. And then you saw Anthony Chiquillo come in. He actually got some reps today at outside linebacker with James Harrison out of the lineup. He didn't hurt his cause. I mean, I think he justified being on the active roster. He justified being that depth guy that a lot of teams were hoping he would be, as he was really the camp darling this year in training camp in terms of his eye-popping performances in training camp. But I just thought that some of these young players have really stepped up, and it's been good to see. It's good to see these young guys and not having to rely on a guy like James Harrison. Jarvis Jones didn't think he played horrible, and everyone's going to rip him probably for not being able to pull down Johnny Manziel on that sack, but I thought he scored a touchdown, but it turns out they ruled him down at the one. He was held on that play. No one called that. But I just want to get your take on the young players, especially on the defensive side of the football. Daniel McCullough saw some time as well. What are your thoughts on some of these young guys getting some playing time?
You know what, Chiquillo, and the biggest thing I look for, just don't be a liability. Don't give up outside contain. Don't be blown off the ball and be a glaring weakness for a team to exploit. And he was not. And not only that, but he looked like he was getting to the ball sometimes. He was executing his responsibility. Bud Dupree, like you said, he's learning. There was that one they tried a sweep play to the right side of the offense, and he engaged. And this is something you know I said this a billion times last year. Keep your outside shoulder free, and that's something that Worlds never did. And it drove me nuts. And he even came at me on Twitter about calling him out on that. Well, Bud Dupree, something he's done very well. He engages with his inside shoulder, keeps his outside hand free, and then that was able to say, nuh-uh, you can't get to the sideline. You have to go the other way. And that's been a huge reason I think that the outside linebackers have been doing a lot better of a job this year. It's because their fundamentals, they're getting the job done, that they're of execution, well coaching, listening to what their jobs are. And maybe, just maybe, there might be something behind this whole putting Jerry Osofsky at the middle linebackers and Joey Porter helping the outside linebackers. And they seem to be playing a lot more sound football this year as far as that. And, you know, and again, it's a rotation thing. They were putting in new guys all the time. There were several plays where I was watching people and they're like, is Anthony Ciccolo like a starter now? Because they saw him and Bud Dupree in together. And you know, they were in together. They were playing together often, but then you saw Moats out there. You know, you still had Jarvis Jones out there. They had a rotation of guys on the outside that they could rely on to get there. Ryan Shazier, though still not looking elite, he had a good sack. He had some good plays on him. You know, there's several young guys, and especially Stephon Tua. You bring that up. That man is just a monster. He just eats people alive and takes your lunch and just, this is mean. There's so much young talent on this defensive unit right now that makes me so excited for the future, but also so excited for this season because they're getting better. You know, Bud Dupree, we've said his name almost every week this season for something he did. He didn't get a sack last week, but he found a way to block a punt. You know, he's making you mention his name. And then, of course, the best player probably of the young group of the front seven, Cameron Hayward, he was lighting it up. He always lights it up. He just bullies people around, takes control of the line of scrimmage, gets after the quarterback and the running back. There's just so much to say. And one thing about Stephon Tuitt, that big guy can move. There were several times Manziel was trying to get away, and he was like, oh, no, you ain't going nowhere. I am so happy about our young guys up front, but also our young guys in the secondary. These are the dudes that aren't supposed to be doing anything, but they're helping out. They're giving them, they're buying them more time with the coverage back there. And you can't be perfect, but I think that's what the Steelers have given up with their defense. They're like, look, we're going to play this style of defense. It'll give you yards, but you're going to have to make the plays to beat us. It's not going to be us giving up the big plays by sitting on one-on-one coverage. You're going to have to pick apart our zones, read our blitzes, and do it all day. Because Keith Butler, he says, look, I'm going to send my guys on every third down, and you're going to feel it. So I'm super excited about our young guys on defense, Jeff, and maybe we'll do some film room work on that this week, talking about the youngsters getting it done.
Yeah, and I think this is a great time to say, anyone listening, you can expect on the bye week, we're going to be doing a lot of film room stuff. One of the biggest projects we're going to do this year, because we have the time with the bye week, is we're going to do a breakdown of the Steelers cover two. That was a huge storyline coming into the season, was the transition to the cover two, Mike Tomlin putting his stamp on the defense as he was a Tampa 2 coach down and with the secondary in Tampa Bay under Tony Dungy. We're going to be doing that. To be on the lookout for that. We have another phone call. Let's see if we get this person on the air. Here's 347-406. You're on with Jeff and Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Hey, how's
it
going?
Sir, how you doing?
Doing good. Nice win. Just wanted to make a couple comments. One, I was very surprised when Ben was activated as the backup. My thought was, I mean, if he's healthy enough to be the backup, then why not start him? You know, unfortunately, Landry went out, but, I mean, Ben was able to come in. But, you know, that just told me, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Maybe you've already spoken on it. But that just told me that Mike Tomlin was literally saying, we don't feel the Browns are good enough to beat us with Ben playing. We can actually rest him for a week and start Landry. Because for him to be active and be the backup, if he's going to be active as the franchise guy, you start him. But the fact that they didn't was a clear message to the Cleveland Browns that you're not good enough to beat us even with our backup quarterback. Do you agree with that?
I think that there was a lot of in terms of the ebb and flow of the game and certain things that you do and don't do in the game. I thought there was a couple middle fingers sent from the Steelers to the Browns sideline. For instance, with the 30-9, there was with the 30-9 lead, the Steelers are throwing it deep to Martavis Bryant. I mean, you normally don't do that. I mean, you're normally looking to grind the clock out to get to punt the ball back. The game's out of reach, anyways. But you're right. I mean, Mike Tomlin activating Roethlisberger had a lot of people scratching their heads. But you're right. I mean, if he's healthy enough to be on the active roster, why isn't he healthy enough to play? Well, you know what? We're going to rest him. I think if it doesn't speak to what you said, and that is that Roethlisberger, you know, we're going to win with Landry Jones, it also speaks to them not being comfortable with Michael Vick. Because Vick is healthy, and I think that it also says a slap in the face to him in terms of, look, a one-legged Ben Roethlisberger is better than 100% Michael Vick, at least in this offense, at least in this context. I don't think there's any love lost between these two teams. It's just been so one-sided that it doesn't even feel like a rivalry. And I thought that the biggest middle finger was when they were throwing the ball and they had a commanding lead. Chris, what's your take on the situation?
I agree with you. I know.
Oh, okay, there you are.
First, no, sorry, yes. I didn't realize that was a pass-off. First of all, the Browns, they have to hate themselves right now. Ed Bouchette said when Landry Jones got stepped on by Marcus Gilbert, like only the Browns would find a way to put Ben Roethlisberger into a game when he's the backup. And that's what they did. And it was, I mean, I'm not saying they did this on purpose or that,
right.
You know, but it's just been luck. It's just who the Browns are. They find ways to lose games, and they really did. You know, they had that big stop on third down that forced a field goal, and then they committed a penalty that got us more downs. And I'll also say this. Everyone always gets on Tomlin's aggressivism, but I thought it was the perfect move to go for on fourth and goal at the one and give your – say, I believe in my offense, but I also believe in my defense to pin them there if they don't make it. And that was exactly what happened. They pinned them to the one, gave their offense two shots to score, and the offense eventually took advantage of it the second time. There are so many things that, you know, the Browns, and even, like, I'm in a Facebook group with other sports fans, and there's a lot of Browns fans in this group, and they were super angry. They were just blowing up the group because of that last pass to Antonio Brown in the end zone when the game was clearly over, but it looked like Ben just wanted to put it on him, or someone wanted to put up the score, and they got the pass interference call, but then they took the classic move of taking the knee at the one-yard line. But, man, the Browns, they have to hate us more than anyone hates anybody, because I'm pretty sure coming in the game, they're like, if we could just stop Landry Jones, and then when Landry gets hurt, oh, yeah, we're getting a hurt Ben Roethlisberger, and oh, no, he came out and beat us again.
You know, it's really interesting to me, because exactly what you said, I'll even go so far to say Tomlin was very cower-esque in the way he was needling and sticking it to the Browns. I was a little bit surprised with some of those moves, but hey, that's kind of how it is. You know, when you play your rivals, these teams, like Jeff said, don't like each other. I also want to get your thoughts on the Browns' defensive game plan. I thought it was terrible defensive play calling in terms of they just basically said, look, if Landry's playing, we're going to stack this box. We're going to run blitz every other play, and we're going to make him throw. Well, then Ben Roethlisberger comes to the game, and they basically kept the same philosophy. They kept singling up on the receivers and just getting absolutely torched. Did they literally think they were going to be able to stop Martavis Bryant with Pierre Desir? I just couldn't believe the strategy that they were doing. They never adjusted. They just said, look, do what you want, but you're not going to run the football on us. That, to me, was almost very Raven-esque when they're not good in a few years. They're like, pass all you want, but you're just not going to run the ball. I just couldn't believe the defensive strategy. It was bad play calling. It was very Brown/clowns. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I agree. And honestly, when you look at Mike Pettine on the sidelines, it looked like a man that was on – he was on – his time was basically dwindling with the team.
Yeah.
I fully expect him to get fired. And you wonder if the team's even playing hard for him anymore. And he knows that they go through coaches almost as fast as they go through quarterbacks. But you're right. There was no adjustment at all. It almost seemed like they had spent all week preparing for Landry Jones and even to Quan Gibson, who I wrote the article about on the website, that he said he was basically calling the Steelers bluff and Ben's not going to play. Well, it seemed like they all felt that way. They all had their hats in this one ring of Landry Jones is going to play, we're going to stop D'Angelo Williams, and we're going to win the game. But then Ben Roethlisberger comes in, and I think that they figured at first Ben's not as mobile. They're not going to throw the ball as much. Well, Todd Haley was just like, well, screw that. Ben's in. Let's sling the rock. And next thing you know, Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant go off. Brown scores two. Davis scores one. Could have had possibly another one if he doesn't fumble and gets another red zone opportunity. It's typical Browns. I mean, I think that the play that epitomizes the Browns, there's two plays that come to mind. The first was the fumble by Jacoby Jones, which gets recovered by Pittsburgh. And during the scuffle, I'm going to find this and put it on our Vine account, by the way. And the Browns players are standing there, and one of them is pointing, you know, with the arm up, it's first down, first down. He's pointing the wrong way.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
That's a very brownish thing to do. That's the hashtag Browns being Browns. And then the other one is simply where the Browns defense just, I don't know what the heck they were doing on some of these plays, but I mean, it was the offense actually. It was where Johnny Manziel goes down. They blew him at the half yard line, and then a holding call later on in an Isaiah Crowell run puts him back. Then he gets sacked. Then it's a short completion, and next thing you know, they're back into the red zone when they had a first and goal from the half yard line. That's a very Brown thing to do, Chris. What do you think?
I thought I was saying it too. Brown's gonna Brown because I mean that's what Terridge is doing. The field goal, then they gave us the extra opportunity. The penalties that put them back, and then they got sacked again. I mean they had like second and goal at their own 20, at our 20. It was ridiculous what they were doing. But that's what bad teams do. That's what losers do. They give you opportunities to win, even when they really should have. They should be the ones taking advantage of things. Just so many times the Browns just gave it up. They just gave up the draws, man. But it was just really poor. And you're right, Pettin. I mean, in my estimation of how organizations should work, Pettin should not be on the hot seat. He's inheriting a dumpster fire of an organization.
I agree.
You know, he shouldn't be on the hot seat. But like Jeff said, this team goes through coaches faster than the Kardashians go through husbands. You know, it's a situation where you're gonna be. I thought about that one in 5 seconds too. It didn't take too long. So you're looking at a situation where he's thinking like, I know what this team does. I know what I put myself in here, and they're about to get rid of me. And he's got a second year quarterback that's still trying to figure things out. But people have been saying you should have been playing him all season. It's going to be a problem in the long run, and I think that he knows his job is in trouble, and it might be affecting his coaching, and it's definitely affecting how the team is playing. But also note that this team has also befallen some bad luck as well. We talk about our injuries, but also let's not forget that they're missing their two top corners. Joe Hayden's been out, and then they have Whitner out at safety, and it's nothing like what the Steelers are going through, but it is a problem, and I do think that the culmination of things just piling on, this is when the Steelers get a bunch of problems, they deal with it. They win. They find ways to win with Michael Vick at quarterback or Landry Jones at quarterback. And despite going on their fourth kicker and their fourth quarterback, they find ways to win. The Browns, they find ways to just fall apart even more. So that's the difference between, I think, a great organization and a not good organization.
Well, absolutely. And I couldn't believe – well, but to your point, like when you're missing Hayden, when you're missing Whitner – when you're down to your third, fourth corner, I just did not understand the strategy when Ben Roethlisberger comes into the game that we're still going to all-out run blitz. We're just not going to let you run, but we're going to single up and play this type of man, big boss coverage. And I couldn't believe it. And they just paid for it. And I think that kind of – that may have fed into us throwing it a little later because they never got out of it. They just kept doing it. And I couldn't understand why they were insistent on that strategy. It was terrible defensive play calling. I mean, if it's one thing you don't do with our receivers is you don't single up like that with the quarterback we have. That's a recipe for disaster. And I just – it's amazing when you see these coaches and you're right, I'm not saying Patine needs to be fired, but the things that they did today are very indicative of what the clown organization is. So I absolutely agree with you. And I don't even think Manziel on the offense – I don't even think he – I mean, he represented himself okay in the pocket. He looked like he was going through his reads. He made a lot of mistakes, but I don't even think you could put the game on him. It was just their defense couldn't do anything.
No, yeah, and that's like, you know, before on Saturday I published an article. We do 5 questions with our opponent each week, and I asked Dogs by Nature editor Scott McCorney. I said, you know, what's the deal with this Johnny Manziel experiment? What are the fans kind of thinking? And he said, look, the fans aren't mad at Johnny Manziel. They just want to give the guy a chance. The team's 2-7, and now they're 2-8. What do you have to lose? Why would you put in a 36-year-old quarterback, McCown, even if he is healthy? It's going to do you no good. I mean, the guy's not going to be playing for that many more years. You want to see what you have in the young guy. And I agreed with him. I said, you know what, that's the truth. If you're going to put a first-round draft pick at quarterback, you got to give him a chance to play. At this point, they're 2-8. The best they can do is 500. It's not going to be good enough in the AFC. You might as well just put this guy in and see what the heck happens. That's my opinion. And so I think that the Browns, if they're smart, just put him out there because he didn't lose. They didn't lose because of Johnny Manziel. And you're going to deal with him. He's got the quick feet. The offensive line, they did. I think the Steelers played them perfectly. They were able to. Right. They run blitz to perfection. Will Allen looked great coming on the blitz there on the off the edge. And they were able to put pressure with just their front four, and they dropped everyone else into coverage, and Manziel had nowhere to go with the football. And so that's what you want to do with a young guy, and especially one like Manziel. And I was proud of the fact that he didn't run for a lot of yards. That he's a very mobile quarterback, and the Steelers have struggled against that. And I thought defensively the Pittsburgh Steelers had a great game plan, unlike the Browns, who didn't have a very good game plan. I thought the Steelers did. So anything else before we let you go?
To your point, I thought the Browns had a great defensive game plan for Landry Jones. But when he goes out of the game, then there's no adjustment. That's where it's like, no, this game, this defensive play calling isn't up to snuff. To your point about our defense, you know, we have to remember, last year, even though we were 11-5, the last 6 quarters we played the Browns, they owned us, particularly in the running game. And I like the way our front 7 came out, run fit, run blitzed. They got off blocks. They tackled pretty well. And you know, you got to feel good about that, considering I think Crowell and Johnson are a little bit of a more athletic tandem than last year's Crowell and Tate, even though the Browns are missing a lineman. It's still a good offensive line from a run-blocking standpoint, and I like the way that we competed, and it allowed us to get the lead, and then that takes them out of the running game.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, take it easy. So, Chris, some final messages here to wrap things up. Let's talk some winners and losers quickly before we go ahead and take a week break, a week hiatus, take the bye week, rest up, get ready for that Seattle Seahawks game. Who were some of your winners and losers? I'm going to give you a 6 o'clock deadline for your article today if you didn't know that by now. Go ahead. What are some of your winners and losers?
Clear winner would be, Antonio Brown's a winner for me. Mike Mitchell's a winner for me. And you know what? Martavis Bryant is going to get a winner for me, though he did fumble the ball. He came back out. He never lost his confidence. And he was able to make the big play. Ben Roethlisberger is a winner for me, coming off the bench and delivering the way he did. And that's what you expect out of a Hall of Fame elite leader. So, you know, he's hurt. He's on one foot. You know, his knee's in a brace. His foot's in a special shoe. But still, he finds a way. It's like Maya Angelou, still I rise. You know, he just comes up and just does what he has to do to get it done when you need him to get it done. Great teams don't always win, but they win just when they have to. And I think that was something he knew, as this team needed to be 6-4 going into the bye week. And he knew they really needed to pull this out. And they pulled it out in a big way, a stomping. And I said this before, I didn't know if he'd been Roethlisberger, but I said, this team needs to put the Browns down, defeat them, crush them, give them no hope. And that's exactly what they did. On the defensive front, man, I got to look at the numbers again to see who my defensive winners are. I said definitely Mike Mitchell. But, you know, just with Cam Hayward, he seems to always be a winner for us. Bud Dupree seemed to play really strong. And it's funny, losers, Jacoby Jones, just because, well, that position's been a loser all season. Cody Wallace, there were several times he really whiffed, and Danny Shelton was eating his lunch. He did not perform well for me. And he hasn't performed great all season, but there's been times where he's adequate, and he went up against a rookie today, and the rookie took him to school. He'll be on my losers list, but there's a lot of winners today just because when you beat anybody 30-9, There's going to be a lot of happy things to say. But, yeah, I guess first reason the winners are Ben, Brown, and Bryant, and Mitchell. And there's probably going to be another pass rusher. There's probably going to be a pass rusher in that mix. But first thought losers are Cody Wallace and Jacoby Jones. And it looks like he's going to be it looks like he could. I mean, you were right. He may be on his way out because the team's like, we don't need that. And they're probably thinking, all right, well, we may need another backup quarterback spot, you know, just to prepare for Landry Jones and Michael Vick, you know, in case something else happens. So, you know, I consider that those to be my losers, but my winners, there's a lot of winners today. And I'd say Pittsburgh fans are winners. And if we're going to pick an overall big loser, I would also have to say Cleveland, because Cleveland is Cleveland.
Absolutely. And, you know, the funny thing is Pittsburgh, you know, you're at the bye week, you're at that your midway point of the season. I understand you played 10 games, but you're 6-4. You dealt with some of the biggest big-game injuries in the NFL with Le'Veon Bell, Roethlisberger in and out of the lineup, suspensions to Bryant and to Bell to start the year, Marquise Pouncey goes down, Sean Sweeshan, your kicker, he goes through him, Hartley, Scobie, Ordeal. This team has been through the ringer in these 10 games. But nonetheless, Pittsburgh fans knew that they had to go 2-3 in this last stretch. They knew they had to, you know, hold serve at home, so to speak, and they did that. They won their last 2 or 3. I understand that they should have won all three. They look at that Cincinnati game, it's one that got away. But what are you going to do? You're 6-4, 2-game winning streak, going into the bye week, and now you turn to, as a fan, you have to root for other teams. So you got to sit there and say, okay, who are we rooting for this week? Well, we'll tell you that next week. As we get ready for the upcoming schedule, we'll have a full mop-up of games that you should be watching, games that you should be looking for, games that you should be rooting, teams that you should be rooting for, because ultimately it could have some significance with the Pittsburgh Steelers and where they sit going into Week 12. Make sure you check out BehindTheSteelCurtain.com early this week and often, as well as throughout the week. We're going to have a lot of breakdowns from this game with no game to look forward to this upcoming week. We're going to be going into some in-depth stuff. Chris will have a lot of gifts for us in terms of our film room. Just some great stuff. Make sure you check it early and often. Tell your friends, family, whatever. And we'll see you next time in 2 weeks for the Steelers' final score after they play the Seattle Seahawks on the Pacific Northwest. Chris, thanks for your time. Callers, if you called in, thanks for your time. We appreciate the calls. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, go Steelers. Enjoy the bye week. We'll talk to you later. Bye.